الرحمن الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد. وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وروح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقده من لساني يفقه قولي. Before I begin, I would like to congratulate your brothers and sisters who are the soldiers of the Imam in his absence on this holy month, the month of self-purification, of fasting, and this unique opportunity to get close to Allah. We have been advised that the best thing we can possibly do in this month in order to get closer to
practically avoid what is haram. So we're going to continue with this hadith, the hadith of Mi'raj, and look at the words of our Prophet and try to use them to better ourselves from a practical point of view. We realize that although the first step for us is to avoid what is haram, that is not the last step. That is the bare minimum. The bare minimum. We have a lot of self-building to do after that. So now we go over the words of the hadith and we come to another one of those politically incorrect statements of the Ahlul Bayt. But it's okay, we don't care. Ya Ahmad, abghidh ad-dunya wa ahlaha. O Ahmad, hate this world and the people of this world. Yesterday we talked about hating the dunya and what that meant and how that could help us in bettering ourselves. Now we're saying something that's even more scary. Hate the people of this world. Now what does that mean? Now, again, nobody said it was going to be easy. These are the words of the Ahlul Bayt. When we look in the Quran to understand the position of our Prophet, the last Prophet and the best of Prophets, this is what it says in the Holy Quran, Surah 53 and verses 8 and 9. ثُمَّ دَنَا فَتَدَلَّ فَكَانَ قَابَ قَوْسَيْنِ أَوْ أَدْنَى. He drew nearer and nearer until he was in within two bow lengths. The Prophet of Allah drew nearer and nearer. We don't even understand. What does this mean? Till he was within two bow lengths of God. What does that mean? We don't understand. But we know that the Prophet of Allah was a special person and he's speaking to Allah about spiritual matters at that level. So we don't expect to understand the words automatically. We look to Quran and Sunnah to make sense of these words. So, أبغض الدنيا وأهلها. Hate the dunya and the people of the dunya. Hate is a strong word. Hate is a strong word. How are we going to use hating this world and the people of this world for self-building? But more than that, I'll give you another something that will make the question even more difficult. How are we going to invite others to Islam? If you're saying hate this world and the people of this world, then how are we going to invite others to the faith? How can they hear these words of the Ahlul Bayt? They'll run out of the room. Muslim apologists will be very quick to run away from these words, maybe even be embarrassed when they come across some of the ayat of Quran. How could Allah say this? The modern world doesn't understand us. No. Calm down, we relax, we say, what is it the Ahlul Bayt are trying to say to us? One point for, just because that's a concern, and also something that practically all of us should be doing. If you and I know someone who is interested in Islam, whether they be Sunni, where they are Muslims, but they're interested in the Shia faith, or they be non-Muslims, one of the good things we can do is to actually invite them to our majalis. Let them hear the words of the Ahlul Bayt. My father and mother were not Muslim. They became Muslim. How? I was not Shia, I became Shia. How? So we shouldn't be afraid to invite others, that we think of majalis as something we do, we turn out the lights, nobody in, just us, we talk about our thing. No, these are words that touch humanity. They resonate with the soul. So now, as a young soldier of the 12th Imam, somebody who realizes that this is my duty, how should I invite others to the right path? One, just very simply before we go in, one of the things you'll do is that you talk about simple concepts. Don't go and talk about the deepest concepts in Islam, the most difficult concepts in Islam. If somebody wants to come to understand the path, you don't take out the risala of your marja and say, act on this and you will be saved. Person just get up and run out the room. So you talk about the beautiful concepts, justice, love, service to God, submission to God, being one with the universe. You talk about these wonderful concepts. In addition to that though, because gradually you will explain those other concepts, but in addition to that, remember to hold fast to your own beliefs. A mistake sometimes Muslims make, and their hearts are in the right place. They'd like to invite others to the path, but they think, I can't do it by holding fast and remaining to my own principles. I have to bend, I have to give a little bit. I can't be that Muslim, that soldier of the Imam. People won't be able to take that. Don't worry, people will be able to take that. All you have to do is be charming. Be charming. You could be a Hare Krishna. If you're charming, interesting, what do you have to say? So you just maintain that inner confidence, talk about your religion, explain, and rest assured that Allah is the one who guides. You and I, we don't guide. Allah guides. So, now what do we mean when we say now the word hate? Ya Ahmad, abghid ad-dunya wa ahlaha. Hating the people of this world. The first thing that I will say that when we look at the words of the Ahlul Bayt, the first thing we understand is that we don't consider all of mankind to be our enemies. We don't consider all of mankind to be our enemies. From a spiritual point of view, just so that we know, when they talk about the obstacles to us getting to God, what are the obstacles that keep us from serving Allah and getting to Him? They mention four. One of them is the dunya. We're attracted to the dunya. One of them is our own nafs. Our nafs pulls us and we're inclined to this world. We're not, by some of those natural desires that Allah has put in us, if they're not guided, will take us away from Allah. So the nafs, the dunya, shaitan whispers to us. And then they mention one more, and this one's a little bit scary. Other people. Part of the reason we don't go to Allah is other people. We're distracted. They say the biggest obstacle to people worshipping Allah are the tyrants that rule this world today. The biggest obstacle. We look in the books of Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. He says the biggest obstacle are human beings actually. So now you understand that if the biggest obstacle are these tyrants and these tyrannical ways of ruling, then the biggest relief for us would be that savior, the imam of our time, who we're trying to work to bring back. But having said that, we do believe that people are obstacles. They keep us from getting to Allah. They distract us from Allah. But at the same time, we don't believe that mankind are enemies. We really don't believe that. We do separate. We have the leaders of kufr, those who know what they're doing, who go against Islam knowingly and willingly. They're enemies of Islam. They don't like Islam. Those people, surah number 9 and verse number 12, a'immat al-kufr, those guys, yeah, that's one thing. Or they're slaves. There's some of them who don't have the tawfiq to be Saddam Hussein or Yazid or some of these other people, but they are willing slaves of those masters. Those guys, also put them aside. The vast majority of mankind, we don't believe are our enemies. We need to save them. Some verses of the Holy Quran. أَكْثَرُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ. This is surah number 5 and verse number 103. That most of them don't know. أَكْثَرُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ. أَكْثَرُهُمْ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. Again, most of them don't know. Again, different surah, Surah 6, verse number 37. Aktharuhum yajhalun. Surah 5, verse number 111. Most of mankind doesn't know. They are uninformed about this religion. They don't know where their interest lies. And we, as Shias, as soldiers of the 12th Imam, have to save them. Go out and save them. When we look in the hadith which describe the mission of Imam Hussein in Ziyarat, the Ziyarat which is known as Ziyarat Arba'in, the Imam describes our Imam, Imam Hussein, in this way: Badala muhjatahu fiq, he spent his blood in your way, in the way of Allah, liyastanqidha ibadaka min al-jahala, in order to save your servants, O Allah, from ignorance. That's how come Imam Hussein gave his blood. We're there to save everybody. We're their best friend. Everybody's scared of Muslims. They're terrorists. What are they going to do? We're their best friend. We're there to save them. We actually want to see that Allah's servants don't suffer in this world and then in the next. So we don't believe that there are enemies. What do we believe? What do we believe? One of the things that we do believe is that the people of the world are actually slaves without knowing it. There's a little secret that I should share with you. If someone becomes a slave to their own nafs, a slave to their nafs, they don't obey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they don't submit to God, they submit to their nafs. If they become a slave to their nafs, what happens to them in this world? When you become a slave to your nafs has desires. Your nafs wants the dunya. And if you don't understand the way that Allah runs this world, you think the dunya is in the hands of the rich and the powerful. So automatically, you serve the rich and the powerful. Why? To get the dunya that you think is in their hands. So because you're a slave of yourself, you become a slave of others. So we're looking at modern slavery. People aren't slaves with chains on their hands, but because of their beliefs and practices, and also it can be us too. If we are slaves of our nafs, if we don't submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we're part of the apparatus. We're slaves and we don't even know it. And we're fueling that system. So always, because those in authority have felt threatened by Islam, because they realize that Islam would free the masses from themselves and later free them from their oppressors, the rulers in society, you'll see the first people who fought against the prophets were actually those in positions of authority. If you look in the verses of Quran, you look for these words. One is al-mala', those that counsel, the chieftains, or al-mutrafun, those who were made to live easy lives, the rich and powerful, or al-ladhina stakbaru, those who were arrogant. And you always see that for every prophet there was always opposition, but the first to raise the banner of opposition to the prophets would be those who were in positions of power, benefiting by that shared culture. This is something that you'll find interesting. When you look at the ayat of Quran, we realize that Islam is there to save the masses. That's what Imam Hussein died for. We're their best friend, but always you see opposition to the path of the prophets. Now, what's interesting is how those leaders and those in authority got the people to fight against the prophets. What did they tell them? This is the story now of Hazrat Nuh, but it's oft repeated in Quran. One of the secrets though. Surah 23 and verse 23. Those same mala', those same council, those chieftains are speaking. فَقَالَ الَّذِينَ قَالَ فَقَالَ الْمَلَعُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِنْ قَوْمِهِ. The leaders, the chieftains, the elite of the disbelievers of Hazrat Nuh's time were speaking. And they said, مَا هَذَا إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ. He is not but a man like you. Talking about Hazrat Nuh. يُرِيدُ أَن يَتَفَضَّلَ عَلَيْكُمْ. He wants to rule over you. The prophets did want to establish a divine government, the same thing that Imam Mahdi wants to do. So the prophets couldn't deny this accusation. It was true. They wanted to establish a divine government in the laws of Allah on the face of the earth in order to save mankind. But it's interesting. How did they get these people to turn against their saviors? They said, he's a man just like you and he wants to rule over you. The culture of worshipping the nafs was the same between the ruling elite and the masses. All of them believed that if somebody was just another person like you, they didn't have the right to rule. The people who have the right to rule are the people with money and position and authority. Verse of Quran again. This is surah number 68 and it's verse number 7. Allah is talking in the Quran. He says, فَلَا تُتِعِ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ. He says, do not obey those who give the lie to the truth. Then he starts to describe these people. And he says, why is it that you don't obey them? He says, verse number 14 from the same surah, أَنْ كَانَ ذَا مَالٍ وَبَنِينَ. Because they have sons and wealth, because they have people of position, they're important leaders of tribes, and wealth, that's why you obey them? No, don't obey these people. They're giving the lie to the truth. So you see, even a long time ago, before there was liberal democracy, before there were multinational corporations, this same system of kufr, of the ruling elite, the rich, the powerful, ruling the masses, existed under another name. The principles were absolutely the same. And in this surah, which is Surah Al-Qalam, one of the first verses, surahs revealed to the Prophet of Allah, in this verse, Allah instructs the prophets in such a way that it's going to knock down the current political system if people accept these values. So these people were quick to raise the flag of opposition with the people. So now back to our own point. When we are saying that, O Ahmad, hate the dunya and the people of the dunya, it doesn't mean that we consider the vast majority of mankind our enemies. We want to save them. They're not the enemy. They're not the problem. There are some who are problematic. But the majority of mankind simply don't know. And also, for you and I, we have to be careful. Sometimes you and I, we have not done our duty and we haven't informed them. They don't know and we haven't told them. So we want to be careful on the Day of Judgment to make sure that we've done our duty in inviting others to the path. So now let me just read you a verse which would relate to this. So it doesn't mean we abandon the dunya either. It doesn't mean that we don't talk to anybody, don't associate with anybody, don't have a job, go off in the hills, run away from the people of the dunya because we're told to hate the dunya. No, it doesn't mean that. Verse of Quran. This is surah number 60 and it's verse number 8. La yanhaakum Allah 'anil ladina lam yuqatilukum fid din. Allah does not forbid you from those who have not fought you over the religion. Wa lam yukhrijukum min diyarikum, and they have not made you to leave your homes. What does Allah does not forbid you? An tabarruhum. To be kind to them. Allah does not forbid you to be kind to them. The ayat continues, and to do justice to them. Surely Allah loves those who are just. As believers, our duty when we're trying to call others to the path is that we invite without using our tongues, through our actions. The same way that the Prophet of Allah lived amongst the people for 40 years and was known as being Amin, trustworthy, and Sadiq, truthful. Moral excellence. You know, we were talking the other day about how the Prophet of Allah was forced to leave Mecca. The enemy, the pressure, Islam will overthrow this corrupt system which exploits everybody. They force the Prophet of Allah to leave. To the extent they came to kill the Prophet of Allah. To kill the Prophet of Allah. Surrounded his house, Amir al-Mu'mineen slept in his bed. Now what's interesting is you look in the books of history. Even though they hated the Prophet of Allah, even though they were going to kill the Prophet of Allah, even though they were torturing the mu'mineen, the non-Muslims had so much belief in his character, they would still go and give amanat and trust to the Prophet of Allah. You know, one of the jobs of Amir al-Mu'mineen after the Prophet left was to return the amanat of the kuffar to them. You want to talk about moral excellence? You hate me, you don't like me, you're my enemy, you're trying to kill me, but you've given me a trust. Islam says moral excellence. One more story from the life of the Prophet of Allah, because sometimes they misportray our Prophet. You know, one time the Yahud had planned a battle against the Prophet of Allah and the Muslims in a place, the Battle of Khaybah. They had these fortresses. They caused a lot of problem for the Muslims. Finally, the Prophet took a tiny army of believers and marched on the Yahud. Enough of the fitna. He marches with this small army of believers, and there's seven fortresses. You've heard the story of Marhab and Amir al-Mu'mineen and how they destroy them, but maybe you haven't heard this story on the ground of what the realities were like. The Muslims were moving forward, trying to surround these forts and overtake them. They said they reached one fort, and they were so hungry, they started eating the animals. They didn't have food. They didn't have food. They're eating the animals that they were actually riding on, either their horses or their mules. To stay alive, they're that hungry, right? The soldiers of Islam trying to wipe out the enemies who are in these fortresses and planning, doing all this fitna for so many years, and now they're going after these guys. At this time, a shepherd came out from the fortress. He was a shepherd. He worked for the Yahud. He came out and he had sheep with him. And he said, "Tell me, O Muslims, what is your message? What is your mission?" The Prophet of Allah sat the shepherd down and explained to him the mission. The shepherd was so convinced, he said, "You know what? I want to be a Muslim." Alhamdulillah, welcome, marhaba, you become a Muslim. He said, "You know what? Now that I'm a Muslim, these sheep, I don't want to go back to the Yahud. These sheep at your disposal. Bismillah." And the Muslims are hungry. They're so hungry, they're eating their own horses. They have to kill them and eat them to stay alive. Hungry soldiers fighting to save Islam. You know what the Prophet of Allah told the shepherd? He said that betraying the trust is a sin in my religion. Take those sheep back to the masters. Then you come and join us. And the shepherd did that. Then he came. And what I remember of the story was he fought with the Prophet of Allah and achieved the lofty station of martyrdom. Why am I talking about this? Brothers and sisters, we have a mission. We are the soldiers. We want to be the elite soldiers of the 12th Imam. We cannot bring the non-Muslims to Islam if we are cheating, lying, our income is... I was in one place, and I won't mention the name because we're being recorded. In one particular place that I was staying, the Muslims were known for burning down their own businesses and claiming insurance. They would insure their businesses, then they burn them down. Ridiculous. And you look, sometimes in the lives of believers, they think, oh, you know, they're kuffar. It doesn't matter, a little cheating. All of them are cheating. The kuffar, they're cheating too. We know we're in the workplace. So I also, they're kuffar. I give myself a little Islamic reason. I remember I was with one brother. He told me, we were in a store, right? He said that, "I'm about to liberate this stuff." He was going to steal from the store. "I'm about to liberate this from the kuffar." I'm like, bro, these are Muslims you're about to liberate. It was in a Muslim store. He'd gotten so used to stealing from non-Muslims. He's going to come to a Muslim store and liberate those things. So sometimes you have Muslims, you know, "I'm lying, I'm stealing, I find some way to go around, you know, they're just kuffar." That's not the example of the Prophet of Allah. So we have to invite by that way. So we're not saying abandon the dunya. We're not saying don't have interactions. We're not saying don't be just and kind. That's our duty. We're saying something else. And we want to see how we use this for self-building, to be those people of moral excellence. Now, a couple of things. Now, this is going to be a little bit tough. One of the things that we're saying is that our interaction with those who are not on the right path, we're supposed to keep to a minimum. And this is different. One of the things that we believe in order to advance spiritually is that we keep our interactions with those who are not on the path of truth to a minimum. We have a duty to invite, we have a duty to interact, but how much time do I spend? We're supposed to keep it to a minimum. There's an important concept in the process of self-building, and that's this concept. That more important than saving everybody else is preserving the self. I don't want to get so involved in saving mankind, saving humanity, doing good work for Islam even, that I forget about myself. Because you brothers and sisters will be, inshallah, the elite soldiers of the 12th Imam, I should tell you, some of you are involved in Islamic work, which is wonderful, which is great. You could be doing anything, you're living here in the West, and you choose to spend your time, your extra time, in service to the cause. Even for you brothers and sisters, I would tell you, don't let it be the case that you concentrate so much even on inviting other Muslims, you ignore your own self-development. Everything is the outside world. What time do you and I spend on ourselves? Reciting Quran, working on ourselves, our prayers, the night prayers, in order to be those elite soldiers. It's all part of the deal. After I've done that, to the extent that I can, then I engage in bringing the others in. It's not that I ignore that side either. But first, the self. Verse of Quran, Surah 5 and verse number 105. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu alaykum anfusakum. O you who believe, take care of your own souls. La yadhurrukum man dhal idha ihtadaytum. The one who is misguided cannot hurt you if you are guided. Brothers and sisters, serving the Imam, doing the right thing, is about doing what our taklif is, doing our duty. That will give us victory. If we ever step out of doing our duty, then we're making a big mistake. We have to do what our duty is. So that means that we have to learn how to say no gracefully. You know, this is a wise statement I heard from somebody. They said, if you want to be a professional in any field, want to be a professional in any field, you have to be able to say no gracefully. If you're the kind of person who can never say no, who never has your own set of priorities, you don't surround yourself by people who will get to where you want to be, you can't sacrifice, you don't have discipline, you cannot achieve. Even if you want to achieve in this world, let alone in the hereafter. Beautiful hadith, I won't do the Arabic. The Imam Qadhim alayhi salatu wasalam, is talking to Hisham. He says that surely the intelligent person looks at the dunya and the people of the dunya. And he looks at, and he realizes that you cannot achieve the dunya except through difficulty and hard work. And he looks at the hereafter, and he realizes you can't achieve the hereafter except with difficulty and hard work. So he chooses the most lasting of the two with difficulty. He knows there's difficulty involved. You know, when we look at the life, even of actors, of basketball players, whoever's achieved, athletes, all of those people had discipline. They all were people who could say no. In order to achieve. There was a basketball player. You'll forgive me. I mentioned basketball. I'm an American. We like basketball. There was a basketball player. And he was on the championship teams with Michael Jordan. Remember Michael Jordan? Back in the day, he was the greatest. Now it's Kobe, but that's okay. Back in the day, he was on their team. And he transferred from the Chicago Bulls later on to the San Antonio Spurs. And he was explaining, he said, why is it that we were so successful when we were part of the Chicago Bulls? He said that we lifted more weights than anybody. We looked at more film than anybody. The Chicago Bulls out-hustled the competition. The Chicago Bulls out-hustled the competition. If I want to get closer to Allah, I want to be that soldier of the Imam, I have to out-hustle the competition. I have to be able to be a person of discipline. If I'm told that I have to cut down a little bit on my association with others who are not in the path, who are not going to bring me closer, then that's what I've got to do. There's hadith about associating with others. And this is necessary for those of us who want to build ourselves spiritually. The hadith says this: a man is on the religion of his friends. A man is on the religion of his friends. You pick up things from your friends without even noticing it, without saying anything. If I hang around my cousins, if you guys would see me hanging around my cousins, my accent changes. You're talking with your boys. Your accent changes without even thinking about it. When we're hanging around those who don't share in our values, sometimes our values start to slip. We start to make some mistakes. We start to do some of... We're hanging around people who swear all the time. Next thing you know, it kind of rolls off your tongue. So in order for me to be a true elite soldier of the Imam, I have to have that discipline. Surround myself with people who help make me better. Be able to say, no, I'm not going to hang out. I'm not going to go to this place. There's hadith, though, about that interaction which is above and beyond what's necessary. What happens to you in the dunya if you do that? You hang around with people who are not on the right path, not making you be better people. One of the things is this: it causes nifaq in the heart, hypocrisy, hadith. It causes hardening of the heart. The heart becomes hard by associating with those unnecessarily who are not going to bring you up. It causes lack of humility before God. Lack of humility before God. Shaitan comes around, hadith. Faith is forgotten, hadith. So we want to be careful about over interacting with those who are not on the right path. When we say hating the people of this world, one of the meanings is we don't over associate with them. In addition, step number two, when we do interact, we have to interact with inner strength. When we do interact with non-Muslims, and we do have to, make sure you interact with inner strength. You maintain your identity and your values instead of sacrificing your values to fit in. We have verses of Quran which talk about Hazrat Ibrahim, our prophet. May the blessings of Allah be on him and our prophet and his progeny. The verses of Quran that describe him, they say, "Inna Ibrahim kana ummatan." That Ibrahim was an ummah. The person who stands for the truth, surrounded by others. They're nobody else but you to stand for the truth. That person by himself is an ummah. They asked the Imam, they said that, "I hear that those who are die in the land of the kuffar," the person comes and asks the Imam, "I hear that they will be raised with them." The Imam asks him, he says that, "When you're in the land of the kuffar, do you call to us?" He says, "Yes." He said, "When you're living amongst the Muslims at that time, are you able to call to our way?" He said, "No." He said, "You, one person, will be raised as an ummah." You and I, brothers and sisters, we have a heavy responsibility and great thawab for maintaining Islam in the West. Nobody's saying to run back home to escape. Be there, but be strong. I was listening to a beautiful statement. It's on the YouTube. Sayyid Nasrullah was talking. He was talking about what it means to say Labbaika Ya Hussein. What does it mean? If you listen to that tape in Arabic, right? Even if you can't understand the Arabic, you're looking at the subtitle. You want to talk about getting a rush, a charge. They asked, he said, that people don't know what it means when we say Labbaika Ya Hussein. What does this mean? He says it means that you are alone in the battlefield. Even if everybody abandons you, even if everybody accuses you, even if others let them down, not only are you there, but your family is there, your wealth is there, That's what it means to say Labbaika Ya Hussein. We're talking about being strong, not changing, not turning, not compromising our values, being strong, being different, being proud to be different. As I put it, we're not old-fashioned, we're old-school. And we're happy about that. We're not going to change. We're not going to apologize for being Muslims. So for one of the meanings for us is that. Now that relates also, though, to having disdain for this world. If you want to save mankind, if you want to stand tall when others are running away, you can't be impressed by the dunya. You can't be impressed by the achievements of the people of the dunya. You can't be impressed by their civilization. Again, a statement from Sayyid Nasrullah. He said that the same way that Amirul Mu'mineen teaches us, he said that the people of the dunya, wa man fid dunya, the people and the people of the dunya cannot mean more to us than the sneeze of a goat. You can't be impressed, intimidated. Got to be a strong Muslim, proud to be a Muslim, happy to be a Muslim. So you interact, but when you do interact, it's on your terms. So strong interact. There's one last one too, which will help us again to maintain and to keep this trait. We're supposed to treat non-Muslims differently than we treat Muslims. The people of the dunya, what does it mean when we say that we hate the people of the dunya? One of them was that we associated at a minimum. One of them was that we did interact. One of them was that when we interact, we interacted and we were strong. But one of them is that also when you're interacting with the people of the dunya, you treat the people of the dunya differently than you treat your brothers and sisters. Beautiful hadith from the Imam. The companion says that I saw the Imam, Imam Sadiq. Apparently the story is in Medina. He says that I saw the Imam and the Imam was walking. And he was carrying a bag. He said the bag slipped from the Imam's shoulders and the bread that was in the bag scattered on the ground. So obviously the companion, like you, one of us, what we would do, we'd run forward and we start to help and assist our Imam. So he runs and he starts gathering the bread and putting the bread into the bag to give it to the Imam. After that he begs the Imam, please allow me to carry the bag. The Imam says, no, I'll do this myself. So brothers and sisters, when we see the example of the Imam. He wasn't a leech in society. He was there to help and assist the people. We should also be people who are assisting others. Carrying this bread to go and give it to the fuqara. When he's going to give it to the fuqara and the poor people, he goes and he distributes the bread. The Imam, the narrator comes to the Imam. He says that, Imam, they're not Shia. They're brothers and sisters of the Ahlul Sunnah. They're not Shia. You're giving bread to them. The Imam is the Imam for mankind. We also, we're there to save mankind, to help others. One wonderful thing we can do is sometimes if we have a profession, to offer our services to the less fortunate. You know they have in some places, they will offer, medical doctors will also offer assistance to the less fortunate. Others who have services, they can offer assistances to the believers, but also to the others. So the Imam though made a point, he said that if they were Shia, I would have given them salt also. If it's Shia, a follower of the Ahlul Bayt, I treat them differently. I treat them better. So one of the meanings that we'll take from this hadith about hating the people of this world is that we're not their enemies. We do interact, we do serve them, but when we serve them, we do make a distinguishment between them and us. And let them see that, and let them appreciate that, that I treat my Muslim brothers and sisters better than I treat the rest. I treat everybody kindly, but my fellow Shia brothers and sisters are special for me. We end with that. We ask that Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, make us the true soldiers of Imam Mahdi. We ask that Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, hasten the reappearance of our Imam. We ask Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, that He protect all of the believers, all of the Maraja, and especially the leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. Salawat.